is before we read the scriptures, there's a little card here that was sent in, and the sender asked us, said, would you please read this card to the church? It says, just want to say thanks. What a nice thing to do. Life is made so much brighter by people like you. And here is what she writes on it. Dear friends, it sure is good to be back home again and on the improvement list. Can hardly wait to come over to Raleigh and visit with all of you in your church again. Thanks to each of you for your many cards and prayers. They have blessed my heart in many ways. May the Lord give his blessing to your entire church family. I give you a lot of guesses. This is Larry Summerlin's mother. You know, she was very sick there and we're praying for her. She's home now and she sends this card to thank you all for the interest you have taken in her. Now we open your Bibles at Hebrews chapter 11 again. Hebrews chapter 11. Now to get our connection, we'll look again at some of the verses we've been emphasizing in past weeks. Look again at verse 35 of chapter 10. Cast not away therefore your confidence, which hath great recompense of reward. Verse 38, now the just shall live by faith. I connected these two statements together, you'll remember, as giving the background to what's presented to us in chapter 11. Cast not away therefore your confidence. The just, that is the justified one, shall live his or her life on the principle of faith, that is confidence in God. So chapter 11. Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen, for by it the elders obtained a good report. Now look at verse 5, which is our subject for tonight. Verse 7, by faith Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet, moved with fear, prepared an ark to the saving of his house, by the which he condemned the world, and became heir of the righteousness which is by faith. I'm sure the Lord will bless to us the reading of these verses. We have already studied what it meant to have confidence in God. We have studied Abel, the man who came and worshipped God by faith and had an acceptance with God. We have studied Enoch, the man who walked with God 300 years and bore his witness. Now you move on to Noah. Now most of you here tonight are familiar, I suppose, with this, that these three men, Abel, Enoch, and Noah, all lived in that era of time prior to the flood. I mentioned in a past study that the time from the fall of man to the flood was approximately 1,600 years. It was quite a long dispensation. But we should also mention that the dispensation we're in now, this age of grace, is the longest dispensation on record. It has gone for over 1,900 years. Being the age of grace, of course, grace reigns through righteousness. The longest dispensation on record, God has, as it were, shown his grace and his long suffering to mankind. But Enoch here is the man who brings to an end that age prior to the flood. In fact, Noah, is the connecting link. Noah is the connecting link between the dispensation prior to the flood and the commencement of the dispensation after the flood. You will remember that Enoch had a son whom he called Methuselah. It was at the time that Methuselah was born that Enoch began to walk with God. Now the name he gave to that child is most interesting. It means, when he is gone, it shall come. What? Well, do you remember in his witness he kept telling ungodly men that God would judge them for their ungodly deeds, which they had ungodly committed. In plain words, Enoch walked with God and preached judgment. Now, when you move on to Noah, Noah didn't preach judgment, Noah preached righteousness. He was a preacher of righteousness, but he prepared for coming judgment. Now, it would appear from the study of these two men, if you study Enoch first of all, as I indicated last week, it would appear that for 300 years of witnessing, he wasn't much of a success. He certainly would not be employed as a big-time evangelist today. A few years ago, a fellow advertised in a certain magazine that he was an evangelist open for engagements. And he concluded his little advert by saying, "Converts guaranteed." Converts guaranteed. I wonder how many he guaranteed. The usual count is usually about 200 for 2 weeks. If you can't come up to that, you're not a big-time evangelist. Most of 200 for 2 weeks. Of course, it's all the same whether the 200 you get this year is the same 200 as you had last year. As long as you get them up and count them, it's all right. Most of the 200. But Enoch preached for 300 years, witnessed for God, and it would seem that the only people that he left as the result of his labors was Noah and his wife. They, in turn, had their 3 sons and their wives, and even one of them didn't turn out to be very good. However, I mention that to show you that God can start with a very small thing, a little acorn, if given time, can produce a mighty oak. You can plant a little seed, you can hardly see it, but give it time, it will produce. Your God can take little things, and given God's time, they can grow into big things. God knows how to do his own work. So Enoch had a son called Methuselah. When he is gone, it shall come. Now you remember me pointing out to you that if you take the expanse of the life of Adam and Methuselah, Methuselah lived right up to the year that the flood came. Each of these men lived for over 900 years. And if the time from the fall of man to the flood is 1600 years, and one comes on for 900, you trace the other one back, there's an overlap of 200 years. So that when Methuselah was quite a young fellow of 200 years of age, he could go up and have a little chat with old Adam and get the whole story. He in turn could pass on to Noah and to Noah's 3 sons. And if he was able, if Methuselah was able to have a conversation with Shem, the son of Noah, do you realize that he was still alive when Abraham was born? So that all you have in connecting links, Adam, Methuselah, Shem, and Abraham, they could cover quite a long period of time. And Abraham would be able to get quite a lot of information. But here we turn now to Noah, who lived before the flood. Here is a man who had confidence in God. That's what this whole chapter is telling us. These were the heroes of faith who traveled the pilgrim highway, exercised faith in God, had their confidence in God, and were rewarded accordingly. Now, here was a man who was warned of God. By faith, Noah being warned of God. So Noah was a man who was warned. It follows through that he was a man who was obedient to the warning he received. In plain words, he worked according to that warning. For he moved with fear and prepared an ark. A long time ago, while speaking to you here one Sunday on Noah and the days of Noah, I mentioned to you an old man. He's been dead for a number of years now, and he asked this question on one occasion, why did Noah build the ark? And he gave a very simple answer. I've never found a better one, because he was afraid he was going to get drowned. He moved with fear. But suppose you had gone along and you had argued with him, you said, that's a silly thing to be afraid of, Noah. Who ever heard of anybody being drowned on dry ground? He might have said, but God's going to cover this ground with water. But you might have said, but Noah, nothing like that has ever happened before. No, but you see, I believe God. And Noah believed God. He had faith. And he believed if it had never happened before, it would happen at least once. If God said, Noah was warned of God. Noah believed God. Noah moved with fear. He worked for God. For over 100 years, he built that ark. And then Noah was rewarded. Now, when you go back to the book of Genesis, where you read of this man and the day of Noah, there are then some interesting lessons to be learned regarding the attitude that this man took up, the days of Noah. You see, he was warned. God warned him that there was going to be a time of coming judgment. Of course he had been warned through the preaching of Enoch. Enoch preached that God would come in judgment, but he didn't say how. Enoch simply said that the Lord would come and he would judge ungodly men for their ungodly deeds which they had ungodly committed. But he didn't say how God would do it. But at least Noah believed that message, that God was going to act in judgment. And because that Noah was upright in his generation, God revealed to Noah how that judgment would come. That he was going to bring a flood of judgment upon the earth. Something new. But it was revealed to Noah. But now God makes it known to Noah why this judgment would come. See, there were days of wickedness. They had refused to listen to the preaching of Enoch. The world laughed at Enoch. They didn't believe him. In fact, he was one of these old-fashioned kinds, you know. Enoch didn't move with the times. Enoch didn't fit in with the culture of his day. Why? Because he walked with God. And if you walk with God, as I have told you over and over again, you cannot walk hand in hand with God and arm in arm with the world that's opposed to God. You cannot fight on the one side and be with the enemy at the same time. Can't do it. And so they refused to listen to the warning, and wickedness was on the increase. The days in which Noah showed his confidence in God were days of great wickedness in the world. men had only wicked thoughts. Their very thoughts were corrupt. Their minds were corrupt. You can go to different places in the Bible and you'll discover that's exactly where the devil launches his attack. He launches his attack first and foremost on the mind. You know, it's John Bunyan who speaks of the different ways of getting into man's soul. Different gates into the city of man's soul. You can get in through the eye gate, you know. And you can get in through the ear gate. And the great enemy tries to get into man's soul to capture it. The devil knows exactly how to get in. He tries to get into the mind. He tries to capture the thought life. That's why today you can say what you like. I was outside, and you know, yesterday, as has already been remarked, it was rather windy here. These are about the strongest winds I can ever recall in the 22 years that I have lived in North Carolina. Stronger winds than these before, but not here. Yeah, but they were pretty strong, and I was working out the back, and I shouted my wife out. I said, "Come out here." I think she thought I was calling her out to hear the wind at first, but it wasn't the wind. From way over the other street, the noise. I said to her, "How would you like to live next door to that?" I don't know who it was or what it was. It was supposed to be music. Supposed to be music. The noise would have deafened you. I was glad that it was at least a way over in the other street. And they call that, now I love music. I must say, I love music. I could sit and listen to music for hours. I like good music. That's not music. That's just a noise. I don't know whether it's old-fashioned scrub boards or drums or clappers. Everything seems to be going at the same time. It's like Nebuchadnezzar's old band way down in Babylon. Every kind of instrument going, and they have it as loud as can be. The louder it seems, the better. Why? What's the meaning behind it all? That's not music. That's a corruption of music. It has got the mind. When these fellows, they called the Beatles, came over from Liverpool to New York, I could never understand how those young folks were fed whenever it started. I couldn't understand it. I couldn't understand why they even went to listen to it. But you must admit with me it was some kind of an effect on them. And then again, what about all this crying up today about pornography? There's nothing new about this. It's only becoming more public. I'm not as young as some of you. I can remember when I was a teenager. There was trouble in Britain. They were bringing them in from France at that time. Used to point the finger across the English Channel at all the corruption in France. But it wasn't long until it found its way into Britain. And then over here. And all this business about pornography, what is it for? It's to corrupt the mind. Corrupt the mind by what they hear. Corrupt the mind by what they see. And if the devil can get hold of the mind, he'll get them sunk, as it were, in the sea of evil thoughts. The god of this age, says the Bible, has blinded the mind of them that believe not. Oh, whole figures, lest the light of the glorious gospel should shine in unto them. Way back in the days of Noah before the flood, there were days of wickedness. Wickedness in thought. Their very thoughts were only evil continually. Corrupted minds. There was wickedness in action. Delighting themselves in things sensual. Go back and read Genesis 6 and you'll find that out. Then again, there was wickedness with its results. It led to corruption and violence. Why do we have so much violence today? And violence, by the way, is not exclusive to the United States. You have violence all over the world today. Violence in Asia, violence in Europe, violence here in the Western sphere, violence all over the world, violence in the Middle East, and it's developing worse and worse. Why do we have violence? Violence is only the outward expression of inward corruption. Where there's violence, that is proof that there's corruption. And so we have corruption and violence. Way back there then, there was the presentation of total depravity. The whole of the human race was depraved. They were living without God. There was only one thing left. Divine intervention. Where does Noah come in here? Noah, like Enoch, was walking with God. And he was witnessing for God. And he was working for God. By faith, Noah, being warned of God, of things not seen as yet, moved with fear, had prepared an ark. Here was a man who never cast away his confidence. He was a man who lived his life on the principle of faith. The whole world was against him. Remember a very clever fellow. You know, you do meet with a lot of clever men in your days. You move around. A very clever fellow said, Noah was an outstanding man. He said he floated a limited company when all the world was in liquidation. It takes some doing, doesn't it? The whole world was going bankrupt. Whole world went into liquidation. He was a man who stepped out with confidence in God. You know, it's easy to come along and meet with other Christians. Even if it's on a Sunday. Or you go to some Christian conference or convention. And I'll never forget. See, I was brought up in the country. A little small town. There were only about 4,500 of a population in our little town. But we had a nice group who met in the Gospel Hall. There was quite a crowd of young folks. But I'll never forget the first time I went into the big city. I was away out in the country. We were 36 miles from the city. It was a long distance. It was a whole day getting into that city. Even took the train an hour to get in, stopped at every little station and village on the way. But we got into the city, I'll never forget it, going into the large city hall. Looked around at a sea of faces. 2,000 people gathered there for a Christian conference. My, it was encouraging to see 2,000 people gathered together for a whole day for preaching. And then when it came to Tuesday night, that was the missionary report night. You had to be there half an hour before the time to get a seat. One night I got there just a little bit late. I had to stand for 2 hours. And I wasn't the only one. Must have been about 100 people standing. But it was encouraging. To see that large crowd of people, oh, it's good. It's very encouraging to meet on a Sunday with Christians. Encouraging to go to a convention. Because you realize there's a lot of other people who think the same as you and are like-minded with you. But what would you do if there was no one else thought the same as you? What would you do if you felt that everyone in the home where you live was against you? What would you do if you found that all the people in the office where you worked, or the factory where you worked, they were all against you and you were the only one that professed to be a Christian? What would you do? I wonder what we would do tonight if we got home and we arrived at the conclusion that we believed in God, but nobody else in this world believed in God. That everybody had become atheistic. And we were left alone and we believed in God and nobody else believed it. Nobody else believed what we said. What would we do? Well, Noah, for 100 years, continued building his ark. Days of wickedness. The world had turned against them. The world had turned against God. God's standards and moral principles had been dragged in the gutter. The world had become, as it were, just like a swine trap, that's all. A garbage dump. Sin and iniquity all around. Men rolling sin under their tongue like a sweet morsel, living for self. And Noah said, no, I still believe God. God must be right. And if God says the judgment is coming, I'll trust God. He wouldn't cast away his confidence. You see, it wasn't an easy thing for Noah, was it? It's a lot easier for you and a lot easier for me to have a confidence in God. Because in spite of the fact that professing Christians today are still a very, very small minority in the world, for we are a small minority, let us face it. There's more Muslims than there are Christians, you know. And there's more atheists than there are Muslims. We're just a little handful compared to the population of the world. Yet, in spite of that, I just say this, it's still easy for us to be Christians. But easy. But in this world today, there's wickedness on every hand that you and I can take our stand as Noah did. By faith, Noah, being warned of God, he kept his confidence in God. The just shall live his life on the principle of faith. And Noah was a man of faith right to the very end, not only to the time of the judgment, but through the judgment and on to the new ark. Days of wickedness. Days of warning. God warned Noah. There must have been divine consultation. God told Noah, he said, I will destroy man. Strange. It was God who said, let us make man. That's Genesis 1. Let us make man. When you come to Genesis 6, let us destroy man. You see, why? Because man had turned against God. It was time for God to act in judgment. When God looked down in the beginning on the fair creation, he says, it's very good. It's very good. But now when you come to Genesis chapter 6, things have changed. It's no longer good. It's wicked. Wickedness on every hand. And God is about to destroy man. God speaks in terms of condemnation. That era has to come to an end. And by the way, if Noah had to keep his confidence in God then, here we're running on again. I mentioned to you at the very beginning, this age in which we live is the longest dispensation on record. gone for over 1900 years. The leaders of our country and other countries now are talking in terms of going into the year 2000, what it will be like at the beginning of the next century. Might I say something? I don't think man will be in command at the beginning of the next century. Things are running too fast. Things are running too fast. We're coming near the end. You see, things are not going to keep on going as they're doing now, as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the days of the coming of the Son of Man. The very things that were characteristic of the days of Noah are being seen now and developing fast. And there's only one answer left. God must come in. God will act in judgment. Following the age of grace, there will be the act of divine retribution. God will act in judgment. You know, a lot of people today don't seem to come to grips with the awful conditions that are prevailing at the present time. Personally, I don't like to think about them at times. It makes you shudder. It doesn't make you be afraid, but it makes you shudder at the very thought. Let me suggest to you, are you aware of this, in spite of what some of the leaders say, what some of them don't say, in spite of it all, we must face this, that the United States just now has sufficient warheads, and Russia has sufficient warheads, deployed in certain strategic positions, that before tomorrow morning, the last war started in 1939 and went on till 1945. World War I started in 1914 and went on to 1918. If they were to start a nuclear war now, with the warheads they've got, it'd be all over before tomorrow morning. And there'd be nothing left of the United States. And there'll be nothing left of Russia. Do you realize? You say, oh, that's not exaggerated. They've got sufficient nuclear warheads now that Russia could blast the United States right off. There'll be nothing left but rubble and powder. And there'll be nothing left in Russia. You see that problem? Yes, it's awful. Corruption and wickedness. Over and above that, do you realize this, that morally, things have got so bad, that the result of much of the immorality today is this, that the medical profession cannot find cure for the physical diseases that people are suffering from as a result of their immoral living. There's only one thing left. If they won't accept God's salvation, they'll have to accept God's condemnation. Noah acted in confidence in God. He believed God. When the world rejected God, he believed God when the world wouldn't believe him. He was upright in his generation. He would not become contaminated with all their sin and iniquity. He kept himself distinct. He kept himself separate from the things of the world. He believed God. He built his ark. And when the time came, he went into the ark. See, it would be an awful business if he had built it and had refused to go in. You see, oh yes, you see, He could have said, no, I've changed my mind. I'm not going in. But he didn't. He believed God raised up to, and he stepped in. And that proved that he believed what he had been preaching for over 100 years. He stepped into the ark with his wife, his 3 sons and their wives, and God brought all those creatures there and went into the ark. 7 days went past, and God shut the door. You know, when God shut the door, nobody could open it. It's too late to go knocking on the door, then. Beloved, some folks are going to be too late. Going to be too late. Suppose the Lord was to come tonight. Well, that would be wonderful for you, wonderful for me, wouldn't it? Just be wonderful. I've got one burden. One burden. What about those folks we've been praying for so many years? What about those folks we know that are not saved? Are you burdened for them? Is there anything we can do about it? Should we give ourselves more and more to prayer for them? Should we try to say something to them to get the truth over to them? Suppose you had lived in Noah's day. Suppose you had been his son. And he said to you, now look, God told us to build this ark. We've finished the ark. Now he said we have to go in. Come on, let's get in. He said, wait a minute, Dad. Let me go along and see my cousin. Couldn't we get him to go in? Isn't there somebody else we could get to go in? And then God shut the door. Too late. Too late. Noah, by faith, was warned of God. But you see, faith. A man gets faith, as I pointed out to you the other week. Faith cometh by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. God reveals the truth. Man inclines the ear and listens. Faith comes because God has spoken. It comes from God. It's God who moves. We've just got to respond. There's nothing meritorious about faith, you know. Don't pride yourself in your faith. Not meritorious one little bit. Faith is only the recipient. God speaks. Man hears. He responds. Believe God. He was a man who believed God when the world was against him. By faith, Noah being warned of God. I trust that each one here tonight, we've been warned of God. We know what's coming. Don't let us be deceived. I don't care whether this president that's in finishes his term or whether he doesn't. And whether he goes in for a second term or someone else gets in. Brothers and sisters, it's going to make no difference who occupies the White House. It's going to make no difference who occupies 10 Downing Street. It's going to make no difference who becomes the new dictator in Russia, listen. The day is coming when God shall bring to an end this age of grace. The only thing that prevents it now is this. He that hindereth will hinder. He that restraineth will restrain until he be taken out of the way. And the only reason why iniquity hasn't brought us to the final issue yet, and the only reason why sin hasn't brought this old world to its end is because of the restraining power. When the Lord comes and takes his waiting people home, the restraining power will have gone. Then will that wicked one be revealed. Noah witnessed for God. He walked with God, same as Enoch did. He walked with God. He was in agreement with God when the world was against him. He witnessed with his words. He preached righteousness. You go out to the office tomorrow, or the place where you're employed, and you start and witness for righteousness and see how many people will agree with you. Talk about righteousness. They'll laugh. They may not laugh to your face, but they'll turn away where you don't see them and they'll, something like this. They don't want righteousness today. They want to live in sin. They want to do their own thing. But this man witnessed with his words, he preached righteousness. The Lord Jesus Christ taught righteousness. Paul taught righteousness. He reasoned with a great governor one day on the subject of righteousness, temperance, judgment to come, and the man trembled. Never going to say. This man witnessed by his work. He was obedient. By faith, Noah, being warned of God, moved with fear. You know, there's not much of this reverence for the things of God today. Very few people have got the fear of God in their hearts. Tell you this, if there was more of the fear of God in their hearts, our judges would have less trouble in the courts. And we wouldn't be troubled today about not having room in the prisons. If there's something of the fear of God in their hearts, there wouldn't be so much crime. God is not in all the wreck. He was a man who feared God and he was obedient. And he had his reward. His reward was this. He obtained that salvation which is by faith. And he condemned the world. A man by faith. Do you realize that the Christian who lives his life on the principle of faith is a living, standing condemnation for the things that are going on in the world today. Oh, may God give us grace to be like Enoch and to be like Noah in these days of wickedness, to take our stand in separation from the things of the world, and to stand for righteousness and warn people of coming judgment. Let us bow together. Perhaps we'll ask our brother Lacey if you'll dismiss us with a word of prayer.